Nazis. I hate these guys.
In the Indiana Jones movies, Indiana Jones is usually searching for a rare artifact with mystical powers, while some nefarious archaeologist, usually a Nazi, is trying to find the artifact before Indy. While it makes for fantastic cinema, the concept of Nazi archaeologists searching the world for ancient occult relics and lost knowledge is based on truth. The Ananarbe was a branch of the SS founded in 1935 to research ancient cultures and esoteric practices in an effort to regain lost technology from antiquity and to rediscover the ancestral roots of the Germanic or Aryan people.
The name of the new organization was the Ananarbe, the Ancestral Heritage Society. The task is to return the German people to the everlasting godly circle of past, present, and future, of passing, being, and becoming, to ancestors, the living, and the descendants. Of the 46 department heads, 19 were professors, and a further 19 held doctorates. These scholars were now to be inducted into the SS.
As soon as the SS Ananarbe was founded, the Research and Teaching Society, as it was known, the moment those really highly qualified archaeologists organized the prehistoric department in the SS Ananarbe, the whole thing took on a highly scientific direction. As soon as John Kuhns set the tone, only serious research was done there.
The Ananarbe's scope was global. Expeditions were planned to destinations defined as important centers of northern Aryan culture spread around the world. A scientific expedition to Iceland was accompanied by the grail hunter Otto Rahn. It was hoped that an expedition to Peru in 1939 would find evidence of the tertiary people, the race which, according to their theories, populated the world during the period of the third moon. In the Canary Islands, explorers sought proofs for the existence of Atlantis. In Iran, the famous inscriptions at Behistun were examined for evidence of the earliest Aryan kings of pure Aryan blood. For many years to come, the Ananarbe announced, many extensive expeditions are planned to faraway places.
Further evidence is found at Lake Valencia in Venezuela. Remarkable is the unusual elongated form of the skulls in Venezuela. They are convinced they have recovered a lost connection to the sunken Atlantis.
The moon we see now is not the first moon. In the time before time, there were three other moons. And three times, those moons crashed into Earth, destroying the life and civilization that had been built there. In between the destruction of the third moon and the coming of the fourth moon, which is our moon, a tall, blonde, blue-eyed race lived on the island called Atlantis. They were lofty, educated artists, as well as incomparable warriors. And they were brave, for only the brave could have survived the floods and the ice age that followed the destruction of the third moon. The people of Atlantis were the source of all art and science, and they were the ancestors of the Germans.
While most things to do with the German National Socialists has been denounced after the war, the Ananarbe were not found guilty of any war crimes or wrongdoing, except for one member. All of the scientists and archaeologists that comprised the Ananarbe went on to prominent jobs as professors in the world-leading universities, with none of them serving any time in post-war captivity.
All members of the Ananarbe became important scholars in the post-war period. And after only a very few years, most of these archaeologists became the heads of departments of new institutions. And it is an interesting aspect that one can't find pictures of SS Ahnenerbe archaeologists that wore uniforms within the in the literature. It is very difficult to get pictures of that.
Overlooked by the window of the room where Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. These events took place 50 or 60 years ago now, and it would be easy to dismiss Sievers and the scholars of the Ahnenerbe as a lunatic fringe. But that's not how they were seen by the Allied officers who interrogated them. Their report ends by saying this: "It cannot be too strongly emphasized that this was not a crackpot organization. And these were men of the highest caliber, professors from the leading universities, men of the caliber of the atom splitters and the V-bomb designers, engaged in a project to rewrite the record of the past in order to influence the future course of history."
Of course, after any war, it's the winners that write the history, and the world's most intellectually competent and objectively qualified scientists have been replaced by the world's most academically corrupt and politically motivated. That said, the man that the fictional Indiana Jones character was based on was very real. His name was Otto Rahn. Born in 1904, he was a German archaeologist that was enchanted by Norse mythology, such as the Icelandic sagas of Wotan or Odin, being an ancient Scythian or Aryan sorcerer war chief that, before being deified into Germanic legend, actually led his people from the region around the Caucasus Mountains, where we get the term Caucasian from, into Scandinavia, becoming the ancestor of the Swedish royal dynasty. Otto Rahn also subscribed to the pre-World War II belief that Atlantis existed somewhere in the Atlantic when sea levels were much lower during the Ice Age, inhabited by the forebears of all Aryan peoples, from Ireland and Germany to Iran and India, and the island was submerged following a period of cataclysms and rapidly melting glaciers at the end of the Pleistocene.
Heather Pringle is the author of a new book about Nazi archaeologists. She writes about scientists who were obsessed with finding any trace of the lost Atlantean race.
In the eyes of many Nazis, Atlantis was the mythical homeland of the Aryan race. They thought that they would be tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed. They also thought that they were very warlike.
In 1935, Himmler assembled a team of scientists who were loyal to the Nazi Party. The research institute was called Das Ahnenerbe, or Ancestral Heritage Society.
It was an institute whose ostensible purpose was to research the great deeds and accomplishments of the Germanic peoples in the past.
Both believed that the Aryans, a mythical and superior race, had invented everything of value in human history, from agriculture to architecture, the creation of theater and fine art. According to Himmler, this great Aryan culture came to life thousands of years ago, an island continent they believed existed in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. To find a trace of these ancestors, the Nazis trained their sights on the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa.
They saw this as being sort of the southern edge of this sort of mythical Atlantean continent. And they also were really kind of focused on accounts of mummies that had been found on the Canary Islands that had blonde hair.
The mummies had been examined. They claimed the blonde-haired mummies were proof that Atlanteans had once lived on the Canary Islands. And most importantly, they were Aryans. Now that they had proof of an Atlantean fatherland, the Nazi scientists concocted an even more bizarre theory to explain its destruction and disappearance. It was called the World Ice Theory. As the ice melted, these massive glaciers receded. Atlantis was simply scrubbed away, buried under the water. But what happened to the people?
The inhabitants of Atlantis, according to this theory, then fled to various areas that were thought to be safe refuges. They would flee to Tibet, they would flee to the Bolivian Andes.
The search for these Atlanteans would consume Heinrich Himmler. In 1938, he sent teams of archaeologists on research missions around the world. Nazi scientists invaded dozens of sacred sites, frantically digging for Aryan relics. Anthropologists were also dispatched. Their goal was to find proof of Aryan blood among existing tribes. This rare film was shot in Tibet. It shows Bruno Bager, one of the Ananarba's top physical anthropologists, performing racial measurements on Tibetan tribesmen.
They would do measurements of the head, you know, the breadth and the width of the skull and so on. And the idea being that they were looking for certain measurements that they thought represented Nordic or Aryan traits.
Bager concluded that these peaceful Tibetans were once fierce Aryan warriors.
Several post-war studies on Nazi Germany and the occult, such as the 1973 publication of The Spear of Destiny, have asserted that under the influence of the Vril and Thule Society, Germany sent annual expeditions to Tibet from 1926 to 1943. Their mission was first to find and then to maintain contact with the Aryan forefathers in Shambhala and Agartha, hidden subterranean cities beneath the Himalayas. Adepts were said to be the guardians of secret occult powers, especially Vril, or bioelectromagnetic life force energy, and the missions sought their aid in harnessing those powers for creating an Aryan master race. According to these accounts, contact was made with Agartha. Subsequently, from 1929, groups of Tibetans reportedly came to Germany and started lodges known as the Society of Green Men. In connection with the Green Dragon Society in Japan, they allegedly helped the German cause with their quest for occult powers and technology, leading to further development of anti-gravitic propulsion, which was not weaponized in time to win the war in Germany, however, was effective in winning the war in 1946, the following year in Antarctica, by a breakaway German colony that refused to surrender, which is still classified and goes by the code name Operation High Jump. Tibet had suffered a long history of Chinese attempts to annex it and British failure to prevent the aggression or to protect Tibet. Under Stalin, the Soviet Union was severely persecuting Buddhism, specifically the Tibetan form as practiced among the Mongols within its borders and its satellites, the People's Republic of Mongolia. In contrast, Japan and Germany had signed a pact in 1936 declaring their mutual hostility towards the spread of international communism. The invitation for the visit of an official delegation from Nazi Germany was extended in this context. Of course, the German interest in Tibet extended beyond politics, in that they held occult beliefs in ancient mythical lands, such as Shambhala and Hyperborea or Thule. Just as Plato had cited the Egyptian legend of the sunken island of Atlantis, Herodotus mentioned the Egyptian legend of the continent of Hyperborea in the far north. When ice destroyed this ancient land, its people allegedly migrated south from the Arctic region. That said, the National Socialists also subscribed to the concept of an inner earth, meaning that there are vast inhabited subterranean caverns with entrances in various places of the world, including the poles, as well as somewhere near Tibet. At the end of the 17th century, the British astronomer Sir Edmund Halley first suggested that the Earth was hollow, consisting of four concentric spheres. The hollow Earth theory fired many people's imaginations, especially with the publication in 1864 of French novelist Jules Verne's Voyage to the Center of the Earth. Soon, the concept of Vril appeared. In 1871, British novelist Edward Bulwer Lytton, in The Coming Race, described a superior race, the Vrilya, who lived beneath the earth and planned to conquer the world with Vril, a psychokinetic energy. While the book was published under the genre of fiction, it mirrored long-held beliefs by occult organizations that practiced mediumship and internal alchemy, which allegedly harnessed and amplified chi or prana, which are Eastern terms that are interchangeable with Vril. The French author Louis Jacquiot furthered the concept in his 1873 book, The Sons of God, and then in 1876 with The Indo-European Traditions. In these books, he linked Vril with the subterranean people of Thule. The Thuleans will harness the power of Vril to become supermen to rule the world. The German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche also emphasized the concept of Übermensch or supermen and began in his work in 1888 with The Antichrist, which in this line, quote, "Let us see ourselves for what we are. We are Hyperboreans. We know well enough we are living off that track." Although Nietzsche never mentioned Vril in his published collection called The Will to Power, he emphasized the role of an internal vital force for superhuman development. In The Arctic Home of the Vedas, published in 1903, by the early advocate of Indian freedom, Bal Gangadhar Tilak, the southern migration of the Thuleans was linked with the origin of the Aryan race. Many scholars in the early 20th century agreed that they were the descendants of the Aryans who had migrated south from Hyperborea, Thule, or caverns below the earth, and sought to harness the power of Vril and seek out these subterranean ancestral lineages. During the first half of the 1920s, a violent rivalry took place among the occult secret societies and lodges in Germany, including Rosicrucians, Freemasons, Theosophists, as well as the Vril and Thule Society. In later years, they were consolidated by the German government, where research into alternative and paranormal ideas were financed and continued under the Annenerbe into occult mysticism brought into Europe by the Knights Templar, such as Kabbalah and internal alchemy or tantric sex.
Buddhism is a multifaceted religion like most other religions, and Tibetan Buddhism is a particular branch with a strong influence of Tantra, particularly sexual Tantra. If you look into it, there's a practice in Tibetan Buddhism called Kalachakra Tantra, which involves various sex work practices that are carried out with a sort of a female associate. These are all practices, if you can read about them, that are condoned by the current Dalai Lama himself. Anyway, so that's basically to explain where this association with Tibet came from. And so this is where you get this legend of Agartha. Agartha and Shambhala are kind of interchangeable. It's basically this realm that exists somewhere in Eastern Asia, which is governed by these superior entities that have been sort of guiding humanity's progress for years. And so when they discovered the tradition of Tantra, the sexual tradition of Tantra, they believed that they had discovered what they called an Oriental Kabbalah that was similar to their Kabbalah. It was the Aryans who had been responsible before the Jews of introducing this Kabbalah to the Orient.
Kabbalah is derived from a Hebrew word which means to receive, implying that it is knowledge that is orally transmitted down, usually as part of a mystery school tradition, which, according to 33rd degree Freemason Albert Pike and the foundress of Theosophy Helena Blavatsky, originated in ancient Egypt, Chaldea, and among the ancient Aryan Magi, from where it eventually found its way into Europe through Gnostic organizations such as the Knights Templar and Cathars, a heretical Christian sect that flourished in Western Europe in the 12th and 13th centuries. Along with the sacred knowledge, the Cathars were said to have been guardians of the Holy Grail, which was not just an artifact, but allegedly included a royal bloodline. Persecuted by the church, the Cathars found their way into France and Spain, where they were cornered and took up their last stand, where the Anunnaribi then took up their search. It was in a fortified castle perched up high in the foothills of the Pyrenees in southern France, near Spain, that around 600 Cathars held off attacks for months. It was on March 16, 1244, that the last Cathars surrendered. Otto Rahn traveled extensively to caves and castles of southern France and Spain, researching his belief that the Cathars were the last custodians of the Holy Grail. Rahn was inspired by the exploits of German archaeologist Heinrich Schliemann, who 60 years earlier had followed the clues in Homer's Iliad to find the ruins of ancient Troy, previously thought to be a myth. Rahn also was fascinated by stories of Germanic heroes, particularly the 13th century epic poem Parsifal, which tells the tale of the Arthurian hero and his search for the Holy Grail, convinced that the clues in the poem pointed to a former Cathar stronghold as the last resting place of the Grail. The Holy Grail is considered, in most texts and publications, an artifact of incredible power, capable of granting its bearer eternal life, abundance, healing, desires, and unlimited youth. To most Christians, it was the chalice used by Jesus Christ during the Last Supper, later used to collect his blood during his crucifixion, giving the artifact magical powers. In the legend, the quest for the Holy Grail is often portrayed as a spiritual and initiatory journey in which knights must overcome various trials and challenges to prove their purity of heart and worthiness. That said, in esoteric circles and occult organizations, the Grail represents a bloodline with its lineage as the living Grail itself, that is, the bearers of the messianic bloodline with its powers and royalty, referred to in legend as Sangreal, which was infused in the Merovingian dynasty, which ruled France from the 5th to 8th century, as the Merovingian kings were known as holy kings and were considered invested with the divine authority, as they supposedly had the holy blood in their veins. While this myth has been popularized by various authors, there's a deeper esoteric dimension to the Grail legend, which was not limited to just bloodline or a chalice, but included alchemical secrets pertaining to the Philosopher's Stone, which was allegedly the Grail's true source of power, which was described as having healing properties and was used to heal wounds and illnesses, grant wishes, as well as provide visions and spiritual revelations. It was these Kabbalistic or alchemical practices which interested the Anunnaribi and German occult orders that were researching Vril, the magic in the blood represented by the chalice sought by the real Indiana Jones. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.